Hello, and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. It's episode 164, and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars. And joining me are the creator of the brilliant webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
Our cheeky little man of steel, Mr. Tony Esmond.
It looks like that.
Now, before we get too far down some sort of rabbit hole, I'm going to introduce the guest, because the 5 minutes before we started recording,
Phil.
The app can never be shown, or you'll never hear it. But I have a horrible if it's a sign of if it's a sign of how this show is going to go, just buckle up, people. That's all I got to say.
Is he called Biffin's Bridge? Is that his name? I don't know.
It'll probably be a future comic of his.
With him.
Yeah, this week we're joined by a long-time listener who always makes us laugh on the Awesome Comics Talk group. He's an amazing artist whose work can be seen in many a comic, much like the likes of John Carpenter's Tales of Science Fiction.
He also
does a smashing Star Wars bit of artwork, which we're going to talk about as well. It's Dave Kennedy. Hello, Dave.
Hello.
Hi,
right,
Dave.
Hello. Yeah. I was modelling my hello. Oh, on all of Dan's hellos over the years. I had a project in mind that I was going to go through every show and edit all the hellos so that you could hear them all in one big line, but then I realised it's a load of work.
That's a hell of a lot of work.
I think it'd probably be easier to edit like Dan's hellos into Lionel Richie's "Hello, is it me you're looking for?"
Making it doubly sensual.
It would make, you know, I mean, that song's sexy, but can you imagine with Dan Butcher's "Hello"? It would be even sexier.
And a little bit of a, like, claymation as she's moulding that head in the video and it turns around and it's Dan looking at you.
Yeah. Or Park Dan just staring at you. If she modelled Dan and it turned it around and it was a big dong, you'd laugh, wouldn't you?
That'd be cool. Hell yeah.
If it made that noise as well when it turned around.
Hello. Dong.
Yes, folks.
Anyway, comics.
No, let's just forget about that, because this week we're going to go off the rails in a slightly unscheduled...
Better way than we normally do.
Yeah.
You've got rails.
That's true. We've been meaning to get Dave on this show for quite some time, but he jumped in to rescue us this week because we had to reschedule something. An exciting
show. Did we announce
show.
Our guest this week? We did not. Oh, well, that was a result.
I don't think we did. I almost did. And it is an exciting show that's going to be up in the next few weeks.
Yeah.
But that didn't pan out. But like the pros we are, no jokes, Tony.
No, I'm going to make a joke. Everyone knows you're a prostitute.
Yeah.
What about writing when he said pros?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, that was a bit too clever for me that I didn't get it myself.
Well, the thing
shocked me saying that with your northern accent. Yeah. I thought Stephen Fry was an impression in the.
This is me hiding it.
Yeah. He's the northern Stephen Fry.
Northern Fry.
That's not good.
Yes. So obviously Dave's got some great comic work in the bag, and we're going to talk about his art process as well, because you know, no hyperbole, Dave, but we're big fans of your work, you know. And we've known Dave for a couple of years now, but as you can tell, it's a little bit unscheduled, a little bit unplanned, a little bit unplugged, and it's definitely going to be uncensored, I think, this week.
Oh dear.
Look, the way you lot were talking before I even pressed record.
It's filth.
Absolute filth. So I think it's going to be...
I've washed my hands since.
You haven't washed your hands? Oh. So this is going to be the most unhygienic episode of the podcast. You know?
So you can get to hospital first.
Oh dear. But if you are in hospital, you want something to read, don't you? And do you know where you can get loads of cool stuff to
Christ
read?
Christ almighty.
What?
This is my dream, Vince, to be in the middle of one of these.
To try and put him off during the advert is all of our dreams, actually.
No,
yeah.
No. Everyone's dream is to feed me a Segway.
Oh, no. Everyone's dream is to feed you a grape.
Yeah, that's a different show. That's a different show, and I haven't launched that yet.
Aren't we going to do this thing you planned where you're going to go, who was your first crush? You're going to do like a little question thing for us. Do you remember?
No. Right. Well, we will do that. And that's something that I'm copying completely from Larry King, who's an interview god.
Try it out, mate. Try it out, because you know it's unscripted anyway.
Yeah. Do you know what? Later on,
give yourself a little pat on the back. I think you'd be very good.
I might throw you some questions later on the show, Dave.
Oh, nice.
Throw me a couple of curveballs, like what's the best colour?
Yeah. Why do you like girls so much?
Yeah. Is this dress white or blue?
Are you fast? Have you ever had any in your mouth?
Oh, God.
We're back onto Readybrook again.
Yeah, we are.
Do they serve Readybrook in hospital?
Oh, you're tough, aren't you? Look, that's a threat.
Oh.
No, I was actually trying to bring it back to the ad.
Oh, Vinnie Jones is back. Go on, Vinnie.
No.
He's had a pint. He's off.
Don't be mean to me, Tony.
Yeah. I'm being nice to you. Come on. Yeah. Get on the advert. Go on. It's going well.
No, it isn't.
We're only 20 minutes in.
But our sponsor is Comic House, and they stick with us anyway. So thank you. Thank you very much, Pete and the Comic House guys.
It's genius. Fucking genius. I'm so proud of you.
Well, I'm proud of Comic House and all the great work that they do for indie comics, because it is the indie comic marketplace with a difference. Yeah, there's a huge selection.
Gene Paul is literally going to hunt us down.
And hold us sensually. All right.
Yeah.
No, Pete and the gang are fighting the good fight for small press and indie comics.
They are.
And if you go to comichouse.com, there's a huge selection of titles on the database. And, yeah, people host their books there, and you can actually buy hard copies of some great indie publishers on there. There's so much cool stuff, and we've been checking it out quite a lot. Over the past, like, five shows or so, there's been quite a few books that we've checked out from Comic House.
Yeah, there are.
Yeah.
And I did a review of a book that they're actually publishing this week. I did a little preview of Close from Chris Sides, Chris Travell and Ken Reynolds.
Oh, I'm looking
forward
to that.
They're putting out.
Yeah,
really interesting premise of, like, what if the stalker was forced into becoming the detective? It's really interesting idea.
Oh,
wait till you see it.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. Sides is just leveling up all the time, isn't he?
Mm.
Yeah, crazy.
Definitely. He just messaged me about a barbecue at his house as well, so I've got to be nice about him.
Oh, well.
Anything for a sausage.
Yeah. That payment for the review, Tony.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just going to lay there while he feeds me ginger beer or something. I don't know. I like ginger beer.
What do you mean? Ginger beer can't be... What?
I suppose not, can he? Just, like, pour it over my naked body then. How's that?
Why are you naked?
Would that go down well in the garden?
Is it a family barbecue?
With the kids there. Yeah.
I am not touching that potato coleslaw.
Yeah. It's got sticky pubes on it.
Who's is this strawberry?
Tony always brings an aubergine. Anyway.
This has gone so well. I think this is probably the standard ever, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, it's all in the name of Comic House, who are sticking with us. God bless them. And
Netflix for comics.
Yes, because they've got an app, which is, you know, all joking aside, the app is bloody brilliant, and it's just getting bigger and better all the time. Like I say, we've recommended quite a few books that we've read on there. And they've got a huge digital library on there at the moment. Dan, what have they got on there at the moment?
We got some more from the Army of Darkness Furious Road, the Pool List, Lady Phantom issue 1 of 6, the If or
Was that a Dynamite title?
Lady Phantom.
Is that the
No, I think it's a like an indie comics thing.
Right.
I might check it out.
Were you thinking of the normal Phantom?
Yeah.
No, I'm thinking there's something I'm trying to remember.
There's Phantom Lady, isn't there?
Yeah, I think there is, yeah.
The Wicked Righteous from Alterna, Amnesia Agents, Something Wicked, another issue of 23 of Future Quake, Mother Russia, Mr. Crypt, Petra, etc., and Hushes, A Very Victorian Apocalypse, which that looks great as well.
Mm.
So, yeah, lots of great, varied titles on Comic House.
Yeah, there's loads of great stuff on there, I think. And if you want to check it out, if you like reading your comics digitally, like we usually do now, I think even Tony's fully converted, aren't you, Tony?
Yeah, I'm all the way over. Gone all the way over.
Oh, my word.
Really? Have you made the total leap?
No, he hasn't made the total leap. He
still buy dirty paper every week, but yeah.
I've got to get a bigger tablet to read it on. I'm not a massive fan of reading it on the Kindle.
Okay.
Yeah, I need something a bit. Yeah,
it's definitely one panel at a time. If you want to do that thing where you read it one panel at a time and then you look at the whole next page, it's not really great for it. That one is it?
I struggle with it a bit. That the you know, the, is it the guided view? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
I struggle with that a little bit. In that, just I like to move at a different pace through the page, if that makes sense. You know, like I have the full page on. If I'm reading something digitally, and then I can sort of like have me fun and go back and look at the first panel again for a bit, because I tend to read things very quickly and then enjoy the art afterwards, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get you.
Well, yeah, Comic House is for you then, Dave.
The flow, doesn't it?
Comic House is definitely for you. And if you find, you can go to comichouse.com to find out more. There's a 14-day free trial, and like the subscription is only £3 a month, and that is a lot cheaper than a lot of the books that I saw recently when I went to Orbital.
Yeah, bloody hell. Yeah. Not that Orbital are expensive. They're one of the cheaper ones.
I love Orbital. I go in there every time I pop to the Big Smoke. And it's your local, isn't it, Tony? I think it's that.
Yeah, that's my local comic book shop. I love it in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Big shout out to those guys.
Yeah. And comichouse.com. I think that's all I can say. Just go there. Check it out. Mm. And we love you. And thank God for you sticking with us through all these terrible efforts.
That went all right.
Yeah, it did.
I was kind of magical the way you brought that back, Vince. I was sort of like,
if magic was the same as like terrible desperation, then I'd agree with you, Dave. Yeah.
I couldn't have done it, because there was a point where we were, whatever the hell we were saying, I don't know, it was like a cloud of biz, but like this big fishing hook came down and then pulled out this Comic House lettering in my mind, and he saved us.
Yeah, there
I
he was.
I could have done that.
Like a little angel back again.
God. it's like you're slowly but surely chipping away at my psyche every week.
When you do that sort of that sigh, it resonates in my earphones, and I like it. I like that.
Yeah. every time Vince sighs, Tony gets his wings.
It's like your complete exasperation gives me a little bit of a Woody. You know what I mean? It's like the reverse, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good though. Proud
Toy Story cosplay.
Yeah, what?
A little Woody.
If you were going to cosplay as anyone, Dave, who would you cosplay as?
Jesus Christ. I'd probably cosplay as my brother or something. Because then I could say I've cosplayed, but nobody's actually going to be looking at me.
That's more like the storyline of single white female rather than cosplay. Jesus. Yeah.
Could be if my brother was a woman. Is that line from Richard Pryor film?
My brother is a woman.
I wish it was. That album.
Yeah. You can be known by whatever pronoun you like. What would you be, Vince? What would you be your cosplay?
I didn't expect the question to come back on me.
can I answer for you? Could you three go as each other?
That'd be so beautiful.
Do you know what? Some people would think that me and Tony are cosplaying as each other when we turn
in
case up.
Case you do dress up similar.
When we turn
Although
up in
I've
the same clothes.
A handlebar moustache. I've developed now a handlebar moustache, which I sent you a photograph of earlier.
Well done.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Dan's disappeared off for a minute. I don't know where he's gone.
Yeah.
But I was eager to say how off the text you found that picture. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did a show once where I'd drawn a picture of a Y-wing from Star Wars, and this fellow comes round to the table and he says, I believe you've got a picture of a Y-wing. I said, yeah, mate, it's just there. And he's staring at it for a bit too long, and he said, that's really nice. I'll take one of those. And I'm looking at him and I thought, did you fly the Y-wing, mate? And he went, yeah, I was the fellow who played Gold Leader, like. So I'm like, all right, can I get standard picture? Be twice as much, please, mate. I said, I'll have the standard picture with you, like, as if I know you, if that's all right. And he says, so take this picture. And then somebody said, did you sell someone Gray's Sports Almanac? Because he looks like you in about 10, 20 years. and sure enough, there's this like big red-headed fool with like a bit of a beard and the specs and the same nose, but just older. I'm thinking, oh, you look a bit like me.
Yeah, because it's funny. I was when we were True Believers. Russell Crowe came to the table, and
Oh dear! But that's
who was with him.
He told me to fuck off, punched me in the face, left.
Yeah, couldn't blame him. But that's a good segue yourself, though, Dave, because obviously a lot of people will know your work from like your amazing sort of illustration work, and you've done a lot of sort of, is it primarily sort of Star Wars stuff that you've had at your tables?
Yeah, I mean, this is an area I thought make for a nice discussion, because I'm probably going to get crucified amongst the indie comics group, because for a good while I made my living with the old drawing Boba Fett and selling prints of him. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
And I had no intention of doing it, but if I'll give you me, I've made, like I said to you earlier, I've made a couple of little notes here on what we talk about tonight. Yeah. You know, in a bit of a rush, like I thought I'd get you a couple of subjects. Cool. So I never really sort of like planned to get into comics. I just sort of did it for a bit of a something to do. After working in a few other areas, I was a sign writer, then I was working in graphics and worked in the games industry for a little bit. A mate of mine who's a composer got in touch with a lad we both went to school with called Mike Sizemore, and he got back in touch with him after like 20 odd years or something, and it turns out like we all had the same interests we had when we were at school, so we just got together for a coffee and started talking about something we'd like to do together. And Steve had written a short story. He lived in Hungary for a while. This is the other friend who I didn't mention his name, sorry. And he lived in Hungary for a while, and he was steeped in the sort of like the folklore of you know, like the old legends of that are based in that country, just as like, you know, we have, I don't know, Morris dancers and the Wicker Man, stuff like that.
Yeah.
He was sort of like into all the sort of folklore of Hungary. And he wrote this little short story about Blackbeard. I think it's Blackbeard. Like, the legend of Blackbeard was that he was this big, bulky creature of a guy who would turn up on a bride's wedding night and steal her away.
Oh, was that Bluebeard?
Was it Bluebeard? It might have been Bluebeard.
Yeah, I know what you mean. There's Blackbeard and there's Bluebeard. I think Bluebeard is the more sort of fairy
Blackbeard
tale.
Blackbeard was a pirate, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Sorry. I was getting confused.
Yeah. Isn't Bluebeard a character in Fables as well?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's a big player in the first volume, actually. Yeah.
Okay. And in my head, he looks like Bluto from Popeye. probably not him. So Steve had written this story called The Night Bride, and it was like a little sort of short novella, I guess, or something. And Mike said, would you mind if we tried to turn it into a comic just for something to do? Because I wanted to draw something, and Mike's a writer, he wanted to adapt something. So over about a year, I just sort of like took my pad into a cafe on the way to work about an hour earlier than I would normally go in, and just sort of drew a panel a day almost in little scraps of paper. And after a year, I had this little comic, the Night Bride.
So you drew like individual panels, and then what, pieced them together out in Photoshop?
Yeah, because probably like a lot of like guys my age, there was nobody around to sort of tell me how to make comics. You know, I always think people laugh at these courses where you can learn how to make comics and stuff like that, but I think it's really, really handy, that type of stuff, because I'm sitting in this mad little town in the north of England, in Wigan, and there's nobody anywhere who's made a comic anywhere near me who I could go and see or just have a pint with, and they could give me some tips or anything like that. I'm literally making it up. So it was partially something to do, but it was also learning how to do it as well. Like, I'd draw something and I'd go, oh, check this out, this is brilliant. Look at all the detail in the back. Oh, crap, I've got to put text over it. And you only figure that type of thing out when you're in the middle of doing it.
Yeah.
Or I've now made a hat for myself and I've got to put all the detail in every single panel now.
Yeah. That's my career, that. Oh, God, detail. What an idiot. So I spent about like a year, like I say, just drawing and redrawing and just sketching in this pad the Cafe Nero on Piccadilly Approach in Manchester before I went to work. So I kind of knackered after the year, but I had a comic and it was like, I don't know, 14 pages or something, but it was finished. I was dead pleased with that. And I thought, well, I feel the confidence gone up now. And I asked Mike if he fancied doing anything else. And at the time he was working for a TV production company and he was writing scripts for them that they would then go over to the States with and sell to studios and stuff. And Mike said, well, I'll try and get you in somehow. I don't know how. Anyway, he bullshitted him and said, you need comics, right? And I know a lad who's made loads of comics, i.e. one. And so he dragged me into this meeting with them and they said, look, we want to turn some of these script pitches. It was like stuff for TV shows and, you know, possible movies or whatever. It was just ideas, really. But they'd want these little sort of like 8-10 page comics that would sell the story to somebody in a more interesting way than just a script landing on a desk, you know. So I spent a few years working with those guys and Mike. And I look back at the stuff now. Oh, God. I don't know if you look back at your old work, you guys, but Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
A donkey's done it with its back leg.
It counts for writers as well. I bought a fanzine about a year ago because I remember that I didn't have it because I'd written an article in it. And I bought it off eBay and then I realised why I didn't have it because it was like the worst written thing. I literally can't look at it. It's just embarrassing. Yeah. But sort of like, that's funny. I'll make a joke. You know, this sort of shit.
Yeah. Yeah, you see all these posts now, don't you? See, like, a load of artists who'll say 2008, and there's a picture of someone's face, and then 2018, and then they've redrawn it again. And they're expecting you to go, what an amazing difference. But half the time, I'm going, Jesus, mate, I think the first one was better.
Just not trolling the whole of the comic industry, just write that everywhere. Yeah.
I've seen that a couple of times where like someone's done that, and you're like, oh, actually, I preferred the original, the first one. Had a bit of energy in it. The second one seems to be stripped of everything.
But... Yeah. I think there's some. You're right there, Dan. I think there's something you learn from looking back at your stuff. Like, what was I aiming to do with that? And maybe I've got the technical know-how to do it now. I do a bit of a tutoring sometimes with, like, you know, a couple of my mates wanted me to teach their kids how to draw something that they wanted to draw, if that makes sense, like a Pokemon or whatever. So by doing that, this is dead weird. Only by explaining the stuff that you don't actually need explaining every day that you do already, do you get to understand it a bit better, if that makes sense. So I'm sitting with these kids and they're saying, like, how do you draw this monster? And I'm thinking, well, in my head, I'm thinking it looks like a big otter or something, you know, so it would move the same way as an otter. So I look at pictures of an otter and maybe what the anatomy's like.
I bet you do. Sorry, I derailed that. So I couldn't ignore that.
It's the first example I've ever heard of somebody being into otters. Really impressive. Really impressive. Can you get a full one? No, I want someone. So I speak to these kids, Tony. Kids, I'm speaking to.
Yeah, right? Sorry. Bring it back.
So, they all say, like, they don't all say, they'd be big headed saying that, but like, one of the lads said to me, like, he said, oh, I can't draw like you. And I said, well, I'm 45, mate, and you're about 10, so you've got time to get technically better. Yeah. But it was only saying it out loud, it made loads of sense to me. Like, I told this kid, like, if you asked 100 people to draw this monster that you want to see drawn, they'd all draw it differently because they've all got it differently in their head. And you can learn technically how to draw it better, but the idea of how you draw that thing is yours, and that's what's going to make it different from everybody else's. And your version of it, like, let's say somebody would sat there with its arms crossed or something, they might think that looks cool. Somebody might draw it jumping through a cloud or something, that might look cool. But the version that you've got in your head is the thing that makes you different from everyone else. And you can always learn to draw better, but the ideas are the things that make you different. And I'm talking to you and I'm saying this, and I'm going, flipping heck, that's good. I think I'll nick that. Right. Yeah. So that's when I went home and I thought, this is while I was still this is a long story, this, isn't it? This is why I was still working for the TV production people. I just thought I'd try doing some drawings and going to like a little crappy local Comic Con and seeing if anyone liked them, because I was actually looking for commissions, really. You know, somebody who wants a picture of like, something or whatever. So I thought, oh, what would I want on my wall? Oh, I want, I'd want Optimus Prime on one side of the corridor, Megatron on the other one, so you could feel a bit of tension when you're going for a cack. I'm thinking. so I drew them, and I thought, I'll put them out, see if anyone likes them, and they just disappeared. And it was only because I sat down and drew what I wanted to see, as opposed to how you expect to see. I mean, if you asked somebody to draw a Boba Fett, 90% of the artists who are selling stuff at the cons, they'll all draw him in the pose that where he stood on that skiff, like shooting his.
They will, won't they? Because a lot of them are tracing, though. To be fair, that's really
But even if they're not, a lot of them will just go, right, that's my reference, and I'm going to draw that. And I like I said before, I really love making it hard for myself. Don't say that in the wrong context.
What do you mean?
I really like.
You like a challenge?
Yeah,
I like a challenge. And one of the things I do with those Star Warsy pictures, which I've always done, really, is I tend to use myself as the model for it. You know what I mean? It's easy when it's Jabba, but or Leia, you know,
or Princess Leia.
But I always find that I always remember this thing that. There's a guy who, what's his name? I've forgotten. Oh, Ian McCaig. There's a guy called Ian McCaig, and he worked on the concept art for a lot of the prequels, which don't sound great when you say prequels, but his work's just fucking phenomenal. It's like his pencil line and stuff like that is just amazing what he can do with it. And he did a talk once and said that he reckons you can express any emotion. You know, when you're drawing the figure out and you do like the sort of circle for the head and the circles for the joints, and then you join it all together with like the skeleton to sort of build your image up.
Yeah.
He reckons you can show any emotion with just the head and the neck and the shoulders. And I'm like, get lost, mate. And then, you know, you try it out and you have a look in the mirror and you think like, okay, well, if I do this sort of hero-y thing, oh yeah, you can do it. So I like, if I'm going to draw someone, I'm not necessarily drawing it because it's going to be a thing I sell. I'm drawing it because I want to see it on my wall, and it's my version.
I think that advice is also it's really poignant for comics, though, because you have to do so much. You've got to tell it's shorthand, isn't it? A lot of sequential storytelling. You're not telling every single frame of the film. Yeah. You know, you have to get the body language right, isn't it? And like, especially and if a lot of characters, like for instance, just say Snake Eyes, doesn't say a word.
Yeah.
But you always have to understand what he's, you know, communicating.
Yeah, you know he's sad because his head's gone down a bit. Or something like that. it's so basic, but if you act that out yourself, either like you know, set your phone up, take a picture, or look in the mirror or something, you act that out yourself. I always keep a little like you know mirror. Despite my face, I keep a little shaving mirror at the side of me. that's antique because if I need to get an expression, you've got all the information right there to hand. You know, you just. You see
so you keep a mirror right next to the Cintiq rather than just sort of take a photo on your phone or anything like that?
No, because you've got to look for the expression, as in, like, I don't know exactly how to make my face look pained. It's one thing for, like I think I'm smiling in every photograph I'm in, and apparently I'm not, according to me. You keep saying, you've got this nice suit on, and why haven't you smiled for all these people? And I think, well, I was smiling inside. So I don't know what my face is doing in comparison to what I think it's doing. So I put the mirror there to sort of exaggerate it. I think what's our guy called Dan who does Invincible? I've gone blank. Otley. Oh,
Brian Otley.
He said, "Why would you draw comics if you wouldn't like overdraw everything?" That's apt for him, of course. You know, not everyone does that, but I liked what he was talking about.
Yeah,
I like the fact he was talking about.
I sometimes do a little bit of facial acting and send it to artists. I think I did it with you, Dan, recently, didn't I? I did kid looking out the window looking bored, and I took a picture of myself looking bored out of the window.
Yeah, does
help.
That's every picture I get of you.
No, I sent you a really nice one to my new moustache earlier.
Oh yeah, that's true. I went in the bank.
Yeah, that's good one.
Imagine Sid James with a handlebar. That's kind of where I was going with that picture.
I do like that kind of when they overanimate expressions like Ryan Otley does, like Michael Golden does it as well. Kind of like
he does,
screaming and shouting, and it's a real intensity to it.
And that comes in.
Sorry,
go on, mate.
I don't mind the underplayed stuff, but yeah, I'm kind of more gravitated towards the kind of the over expressions.
Mm. Yeah, Kirby did it as well. Kirby was all over that, wasn't he?
Yeah. And it's like, it's because it's comics, because you've got to get that emotion instantly, or the reader has to get it instantly. You do exaggerate like things, and I've seen like, you know, you see some sort of painters. I watch those guys on Portrait Artist of the Year and stuff like that. I tend to just watch anything where anyone's drawing, to be honest.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The subtlety you can get in a portrait of someone, you find this when you hand stuff over to an inker, and if they don't follow your line exactly around the bottom eyelid or something, it looks like somebody's gone from being puzzled to like ridiculously surprised. And there's a real subtlety to getting that right. But if you exaggerate it actually makes it a bit easier.
You've got to look at something like Scott McCloud. If you look at Zot or some of his actual sequential as opposed to his sort of studious books, he does that with very little lines, doesn't he? Because he over eggs each thing, doesn't he? You know that they're sad or they're shouting or they're,
It's like, especially if you've got a simpler style as well, you know, just saying like the Tintin books or something like that, where eyes are just dots. The importance of the eyebrow becomes paramount, isn't it?
Oh God, Calvin and Hobbes. You know, when Watterson does like Calvin upset, it really hits you, and you think, how's he done that? It's just like a line of an eyebrow and stuff like that. But there's something about what McCaig said about getting the position of the body right as well, because it that's a language too. I think I made a note, and I made a post about when I'd finished 8 issues of Vortex, and I was knackered mentally and physically and everything else, and I'd just done a 51-hour day to get the last 4 pages done. not that there were 51 hours in a day, but it almost destroyed me. But I was proud of it, and I added up how many people I'd drawn, and how many panels, and how many spaceships, and how many things.
Okay.
And I thought it was a ridiculous amount. I can't remember, it was hundreds, but it was like thousands of individual panels or something. And each one of those is like a stage. Each one of those is a shot in a movie, or each one of those is a description of an environment or a conversation in a prose.
Do you find when you draw someone, so say you're drawing someone who's, I don't know, angry, do you have to kind of almost, in a way, get into a little bit of a mindset? You almost have to lodge yourself in that he's angry, I'm feeling angry. Do you have to do that a bit sometimes?
Yeah.
I'm not saying not in a sort of pretentious way, just in a little bit in that way. You know?
No, because you've got the job of acting for every single character. Because the guy I work with, Mike Sizemore, he's the writer on Vortex and pretty much everything else I do, to be honest. He sends me the stuff over, and a lot of times he won't write about what emotion they're feeling. He does it with the script, because like he works as a script writer. So for him to do comics, it's a totally different language for him. And funnily enough, that thought bubble that I came to when I met you, Vince, that time. I went round to see Titan around the corner, just to get feedback on what I was doing.
Yeah, because you had your portfolio with you.
I was just looking. I wasn't looking for work or anything, because I was working with those TV guys at the time, but I just wanted feedback from people who actually make comics.
Yeah.
Because like I said, there's just nobody around who does them. And the guys who I was doing it for had never read one. So I was just there to get feedback from the people who were steeped in it, you know. So I went to see the girl at Titan. I can't remember her name, but she's the person who was, who was looking for people and portfolio reviews and everything else. And she was really nice. And the first thing she said was, do you work with a screenwriter? And I thought, how the hell did you know that? Somebody stuck it on my back? And she said, no, I can just tell by how he's written going through this scene.
That's interesting.
That is interesting.
What's odd is Mike will often, he relies on stuff that we grew up sort of watching. You know, like he'll say, this bit needs to remind you of From Beyond, or this bit needs to be Reanimator or whatever it is. And he'll make a reference for something. They'll say, and they get to this ship and it's Event Horizon, and here we go. And because I know those references, I know the mood board he's going for, really.
Yeah.
But none of that's written sort of in the script. He'll just tell me. So it's an odd sort of writer-artist relationship in that he leaves a hell of a lot to me, but he's also putting it in there without me having to worry about it being written down. It's a shorthand
that you can use, though, isn't it? Like, if you've got a good relationship with your artist or your writer or whatever, then why should he write paragraphs and paragraphs of something that when he can just sort of say this should be like event, like you say, Event Horizon. As soon as you say that, immediately it conjures up in your head, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And we're lucky in that way. I consider myself lucky working with him because it's easy. Mm. I mean, if I miss the reference, he's got something else he can use.
Do you think that's because like you've got that sort of your like a close relationship and stuff? Because if you got, you know, would that be helpful for you if you got it a script from a writer that you didn't know?
Well, yes, I thought about that myself, and on one of the comics I sent you guys over to have a read of, The Posse.
I love that, mate. Yeah, I really like that. Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it. Thanks. It's just like a little short story, little horror western that was part of an anthology that John and Sandy put out. John Carpenter and his wife Sandy. They put out an anthology every year. Only of recent. This is the third one coming out this year, but they want to start this ball rolling of like having a regular little short collection of horror stories. And John always writes one and Sandy always writes one. And they were just asking people to have a go at this type of thing. And because we're sharing the Dropbox with all these other artists and all these other guys, of course, you know, I'm nipping in, having a look at what everyone else is up to, just as they're probably doing with me. It's great because you do see how other scripts are put together. I mean, who's in there? There's what's her name? Is it Louise Simonson? Well,
all right, yeah. Simonson, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Simonson, oh, okay. Sorry. And she's
Wheezy.
Written...
Wheezy. Yeah.
Wheezy.
That's what they call it, don't they? Wheezy. Yeah.
Do they?
Do they really?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I'll imagine why.
I think it's Louise. I think that's where it comes from.
Yeah. Oh, good joke.
Yeah. Is that okay.
I'm thinking of that penguin in Toy Story, but it's probably not that, is it?
Yeah. You keep mentioning Toy Story. I'm liking it. That's good.
Yeah. No, you said Woody. It wasn't me, mate.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. Yeah.
So I go in and I look at these scripts, and it's great. It is. It's an insight into how the actual comics industry works. There is a sort of language that people who've been in it for a long time are using, and they'll make reference to a particular type of panel or this amount of gutter space or whatever, and all that stuff is the type of stuff I had to learn, and I might have a different name for it myself, you know, because there was no one around to tell me that. So it's I'm in an unusual position of I've only ever made comics for myself without any other input whatsoever, and then suddenly I'm making comics that are getting sold in Barnes and Noble like around the world and stuff, and Sandy's saying, well, okay, we want pages at 600 dpi, and I'm like, what? What? I've been doing things at like 21 or something. And you find out all these, they've got all these templates and stuff, and all these, and I'm looking at all these scripts from these other writers, and they've got things like they'll write, physically write, this is the exact sound effect I want for this thing to happen, and that seems odd to me because I thought, well, it's so tied to the physical action of what's going on within the panel. Who decides that? You know, does the artist decide?
I write sound effects. I write what the sound effect is generally.
Right,
because
right.
I think it's kind of in. But I mean, I'm open to suggestions. But I think sometimes the word you use is kind of in tone with what the story is a little bit, isn't it? It's a funny one, isn't it?
Yeah. The sound effect, I think, depending on what it is, can immediately bring up a visual reference in your mind. Anyway, do you know what I mean?
Sorry, go on. I saw a letter on Twitter who was complaining about the fact that they didn't want to do sound effects like that. They were saying that should be in the script. We shouldn't have to be making that up. And I was like, oh, okay, I've never really considered that.
But sometimes the artist
will do the sound effects. I know with Nick on Cockney Kung Fu, he does the sound effects separate to the inking, you know, to the lettering. Yeah. He creates panel shapes in relation to the noises, sound effects, and stuff like that. There are different ways, aren't there? I think.
They're a massive. They're a language amongst itself, really, because it does so much for. I didn't think I should be putting these like crazy, massive, colourful words over the art I've spent ages doing, but then it does something. It achieves something, and you only have to look at Otley with Invincible and some of the ridiculous sounds that are going on there, but they're actually phonetically perfect for what he's just drawn.
Doesn't make any sense.
It's part of the whole immersion, isn't it? The sound effect is literally one of the big parts of you immersing yourself into the whole thing. when a car crashes or someone punches someone on the nose, you know, you want that crack or, you know, whatever it's going to be. Really, really resonates with the story, doesn't it?
And yeah. I think there's fun as well to be had in searching for it. You know, you see people sometimes on the group, you know, the Awesome Comics group, and they'll say, what's a good noise for a helicopter
I've asked it myself.
Or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. You get great responses because they're just a load of random words.
Yeah.
Exactly. If you sort of jumped into the conversation there, you'd be like, what the fuck are these people talking about?
I like how people are how their minds are working based on what you know of that noise. Like, how would you make the noise of a sword, a samurai sword being unsheathed, you know, and that sort of like metallic sort of sheen noise. And but everyone's got their own version of that, and that's where the fun comes from. Have you ever seen God Hates Astronauts? Have you ever read God Hates Astronauts?
Yeah, Ryan Brown book.
His sound effects are amazing. Like, because it's just sort of like a door open and stuff like that.
I remember one of my favorite sound effects. I think I mentioned it on the show, was four kids walk into a bank, which is great.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a kid throwing up after drinking too much orange soda, but the sound of him vomiting was the word Fanta with lots of A's at the end.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah,
brilliant.
And that's just perfect.
Yeah.
There's so much fun to be had with it, and it can improve the meaning of the panel, can't it? You know,
if you've got
a samurai, I was just thinking about what I'd do for a samurai sword coming out of a sheath, and if it was an assassin scene, I would actually put the word shush as the sword comes out, you know, it gives that double meaning, doesn't it? It's like, I like that. It's something I really think about when I'm writing a script. You know, it takes ages sometimes to come up with the right thing.
And this is where I struggled, because Mike always left that to me. He didn't put anything in terms of like a sound effect. He is writing like a screenwriter, and he'll say the scene is this bar, these guys are here, and sometimes he'll say like he'd be tempted to go down the Stan Lee route of like they're in this bar, this is what's got to get achieved on this page, and there's no talking, so. Leave it to you, and because he leaves the panel count and everything to me. In some cases, when it's needed and he needs to have it like tightly kept to 22 pages or whatever it is, he'll work on that himself. But when we first started out, he was just saying they get in this ship and then they go to space, like, and they have this scrap and then that's it. He just leaves it to me. So I get to have fun because I can say, well, I really, really like that panel. I'm going to do that a full page, you know, there's fun to be had there, but when you suddenly get thrust into the world of people who actually do it for a living, and like I say, it was an eye opener for me that writers actually put sound effects in, because
to me the breakdown of the movement between the panels, if you're scripting a story, I always feel, whether I should do or not, I feel a responsibility of breaking it down to show, because we all know that the movement happens between panels, don't we? I always feel that responsibility. So to say he punches him in the face and they jump in the spaceship and fly up into the air is, I don't know. I wouldn't feel right about just writing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. The thing is, when he first started doing the comics with both Mike and myself, he was actually working on numerous other jobs, and the comics was a little thing to keep me going, really. He was basically helping me to get a job.
I can dig that.
So when he first started out, it was like he'd do this script and he would write it like a script, because that's what the people were asking for in the first place. And I hadn't learned how to put a comic together myself at that point. So when you start learning all the most basic stuff, like if there's, you know, five people on horses, that's going to take longer to draw, you know. He'll write stuff. He still does it. He still writes like a Tony said to Janice, I'm not doing that. Janice shrugged. You think, what? Am I going to draw a shrug?
Yeah. Janice has never shrugged in her life, I've got to tell you.
But it's loads of stuff. Like, I think it's a totally different mindset to be writing for comics.
Yeah, I think it is, mate. I've just been working through my head there, a couple of things, as you've been saying that. And because movies are a moving image, so... James Bond walks through the door, you hear his footsteps on the pavement, he walks all the way across, picks something up and turns around and lights a cigarette. You've got, that's like five panels in a comic.
Oh, God, that's a lot of work. It's a line,
Yeah.
I guess it depends how you tell it as well. I mean, you could pull it right out and have, like, that go over pages if you really wanted.
Yeah, you could have the foot just close up on the feet. You could have a creaking door as it's, you know, somebody grabs a handle and you're standing. Yeah. You know, there's loads of ways of doing it, aren't there? Yeah.
That's where your visual sort of direction comes in.
Yeah.
As
in, like, you get it more with the sort of cinematic ones, like Mark Miller's definitely, he sort of slows down the comic pacing, doesn't he, to be a more cinematic style.
Have you read the Nemesis script?
No.
No, I remember you talking about it, but...
Yeah, I think I talked about this years ago, didn't I? If you go to the back of the Nemesis trade, I think four pages say something like, "Go nuts, big fight."
Think about that Nemesis thing. It felt too much like a film for me.
Yeah, it was the hype for me of him just doing a film.
Yeah, you know,
it actually felt like a short film dragged out a bit, didn't it?
Because
it was essentially an idea.
Yeah,
With a twist. Yeah,
yeah, because you don't come out of that. I don't think you come out of that and enjoying anybody in it.
That was the thing, the cynicism was so much that it left a bitter taste in my mouth. It was like that sort of, you know, if I'm not invested in any character, you know, if I don't care about any of it, then what's the point of me reading it?
It's like EastEnders, yeah.
Boy, take that back.
It's a very,
mate.
Skilled art, breaking something down and then...
Danny Dyer is in it.
Breaking something down, rebuilding it, like Nemesis. I don't think it does it very well. But when he done the Ultimates, that was great.
That's up there in one of my favourites. That's I was gonna bring up a point later on about rereaders, as in like comics that.
Oh God, yeah, I do that.
That you just reread, and that's just constantly there.
And a recommender for me as well. I mean, we mentioned that, didn't we, a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
That's one that I would recommend to someone who's not read a comic. Yeah. I think it's so done. I think I'll give him credit, the man, because he's hugely positive.
Yeah,
he has had a few little hiccups like that, and he'll probably be the first to admit it. But he's putting so much. He's like putting money back into his community. I like the guy.
And even though like his work, like you know, it sort of went on this trajectory for me. Really liked his stuff. Kind of went off the boil a bit. I wasn't a fan of it, and then he came back around again. And what he's putting out, I'm just loving it. You know, Chrononauts, I think Huck. Yeah. You know, I'm just like,
That Huck was great. Yeah,
yeah.
I think he's not just found, but he's sort of created a niche that people have been aiming for a good while, which is the cinematic comic. And he's because if you think about like the part of the reason Watchmen was so difficult to bring to the screen for so long because it wasn't written as a film, it was written as a comic.
Do you think that's becoming a genre of comics then, a cinematic comic? No one sort of says it, but it's almost definitely.
I'd be the first to admit that it massively influences what I do because the language Mike is using when he's telling me to draw stuff that he's writing about is cinematic. You know, he'll say it's like this satellite appears and it looks like this thing that was in Barbarella, and I'll go like, so straight away your mind's already in the mindset of cinema, you know.
Not to be sort of down on Miller, but like he's kind of very much like the Michael Crichton of comics, like Michael
very Crichton much,
writes stuff like Jurassic Park, Rising Sun, all this stuff that's
for a period they were ideas that were comics, but it's like you say, like Huck, and what was the Flash Gordon one he did? I'm always blanking on it.
I know the one you mean.
Let's call it
Hands on Hips.
And that had a lot of heart about it as well. You know, I like that one. I think he's definitely come back round. And I always give his comics a go. I don't always like them all, but they're all they're all different. You know, that's the thing. He's like picking MPH, for example, you know, and stuff like that. He's just picking ideas out, isn't he? You know.
And I think to clarify it, you know, if we say that, you know, a cinematic comic is like a definable genre now, that's not to say, you know, people, you probably hear that and think, oh yeah, that's people just making a comic that they just want to pitch as a film. I don't think it has to be that. I would say what we're doing a lot in the Awesome Comics, I mean certainly from my perspective, Murder Road is a cinematic comic because I'm treating it like a net movie from the 80s, so it's just one sort of thing, you know, it's like a film, but in a comic piece. I'm not doing that to pitch to anyone though. Like
But you think that sometimes you create the thing, and it's only as you're creating it or after you've created it that it becomes whatever people think it is. For example, I've got a pile of stuff here that I was gonna make suggestions to you for later on, and to be honest, you probably read them all anyway. But one that I was gonna make reference to was Echo by Terry Moore.
I've read that. Yeah, I read the first trade.
It's a monster. Someone bought me the complete edition, and it's fantastic story. It's really enjoyable. But it feels like it's a fantastic story, and it feels like a good TV serial. Yeah. So yeah. Somebody might say, "Well, doesn't that mean that's cinematic?" So no, it's got the feel of something that you would happily watch, like Game of Thrones or something like that.
Terry
Moore's
very much like that, because Rachel Rising is very similar. Yeah. You know, every issue felt like a great episode of a TV show.
Yeah. The Luna Brothers are like that for me as well. I know when they were together. Yeah. You know, Ada and Girls and The Sword and stuff like that. Yeah. It all seems to be like certain length would be good as a miniseries on television, box set.
Exactly,
type
thing.
I would say that Matt Garvey is a great one in the small press world for doing the kind of television film comic, like with White Noir, is it?
Yeah. So he goes for a genre and he writes a book. But then he'll switch. So like Chunks is a comedy, isn't it? You know, punk rock band comedy thing. He is. I can see. But I mean, he wears his heart on his sleeve around his influences around Miller, doesn't he? Now, yeah. I think.
Yeah,
he does.
Yeah,
I think writing a book as well is another massive jump away from cinema or scripts, cinematic scripts and comic scripts. Like for example, you said that thing before, Tony, about somebody walking across a room and lighting a cigarette or whatever. Mike sometimes sends me a scene where two people are having a conversation and he's putting in the emotions of both those people and their facial expressions. And I'm thinking, they're both on either side of a desk or something like that. How do I show if I was to do it cinematically, I'd have to do a shot over one shoulder, then over another shoulder, and then maybe a long shot or whatever. And you're constantly looking, like, you know, you go through the Wallywoods 22 panels. You're constantly looking for a creative way to get out what that scene has to do. And sometimes it's impossible. And to go back to what we were talking about, like how Mike's learned with writing as well, because believe me, he's made a pretty damn good career with screenwriting, you know, without anyone else's help. But in terms of comics, we both learned together, really. Because I'd come back to him and say, you've got these two people emoting in one page and in one panel, and I can't show both their faces in one panel without showing them in profile. And I can't do that for an entire page because it'll look like I'm just doing the Ryan Ottley joke of like repeating a panel again and again. So you've got to, I sometimes come back to him and say, listen, can we change the conversation? And because he's a writer and it's his job as a writer to be able to adapt, he'll say, and he'll come back and I'll have given him a physical look at what the page might be like, and he'll rewrite it so that the dialogue bounces better.
Interesting.
So it's never sort of a finished thing when Mike does a script.
So I'll tell you what I like to use as well is a voice coming in from off panel as well. Yeah. So you get a reaction from a face that isn't actually saying something. Yeah. With the words coming in from elsewhere, because we don't just react when we're saying something. We're actually likely to react when something is being said at us.
That's pure comic, that, isn't it? That's pure comic. Yeah. And we came up against something in the... I used the first issue, if I can bang on about what I do now at the minute, if that's all right.
Of course, man.
Sandy got in touch with Mike a bit later on and said, do you guys fancy doing this? We ended up doing the posse for them, which was just like...
Yeah. Horror western thing, isn't it? It's really good.
It's a bit sort of a nod to the old sort of horror comics as well, you know. I always get it mixed up. It's not EW, is it EC?
So you like it's a sort of eerie, creepy Vampirella type.
Was it about
10-11 pages, something like that?
Yeah, it's only a short thing. It's only about, like, I think it's 12 pages, but it's straight to the point, and it's got that nice sort of mood to it. And I thought, if this is getting in front of John Carpenter, I'm going to draw the shit out of this. You know, a minute ago I was drawing crappy little scripts for these dudes, and it was going, the work I was doing was going nowhere. It was ending up in this guy's bag, and no one was ever seeing it. And if I can go from that to somebody actually seeing me work, then, you know, I don't even need getting paid. It's going to be ace.
My favourite moment in that is the bit where you realise who is riding after them and you do a close-up on one of their faces. It looks ace.
Like I said before, I made a rod for me back there because I thought, if this is going in front of John Carpenter, I'm going to do my best. And I did my best. And he went, do you want to do some more? And I went, oh, fuck yeah. And he says, how about 8 issues, all this detailed? And I went, oh, shit, no. Oh, my God. Holy Christ. So that's where the 51-hour day came from.
But Eddie Campbell tells the same story about this. From hell, he adopted a certain style, a sort of cross-hatching style. And yeah, I was chatting to him once, and he said, I wish I'd never fucking started that in the first issue.
Yeah, I know.
It went on like
I wish 5 years. Yeah, I wish I knew how to.
Because I know how to draw. I'm more sort of an illustrator than anything, really. But I, every single comic I do, I'm learning something from it. And after, you know, 1,000-odd panels and whatever, any how many pages and hundreds of spaceships, I've learned that I need to ink. I need to know how to ink, you know. Because I'm generally just... Do you want to get onto process? Because I'm banging on here a lot about myself.
Yeah, we'd love to, man. Yeah, whatever you want. Yeah, whatever you want. You're the guest, my friend. Yeah, hey, I'm loving this.
I've got this cream at the minute. I've got a bit of a rash. We'll get onto that later.
Put your camera on again.
I should have had my top off and put like my finger to my lips. I didn't expect you to find me on my camera.
Yeah, I didn't realise you were picking something up when you turned the camera on.
No, mate, don't bring up the beach. I'll never get back on.
God.
Oh, God. You know, there's right, back onto that subject of explaining stuff to people that you haven't had to explain before. You know, when I was talking about doing tutoring with kids.
Yeah.
And you explain your process and you think, oh, right, that's how I do it. My wife's from Japan. She's from Tokyo, and there's loads of stuff in the English language and English culture that we just take for granted is there.
Yeah.
That you cannot use with other people simply because they haven't got that basis of that structure. And having a wife from Japan has taught me a lot about breaking stuff down and analysing it, and then you know explaining stuff. And I'm trying to tell her about the peach stone, and she's saying. Peach stone. I'm saying, yeah, well, hold on a minute. I thought, there's no way of getting around it other than showing her.
She didn't
eat for a week. It was all right.
Well, mate, I'm always available on FaceTime if you want me.
Yeah. 3, 2, 1.
Yeah.
One of my favourite ones was, there's a couple of things where I'm digressing here. You can cut this out, Vince. You know, but it's, yeah. See, the Japanese don't have the structure of jokes that we have. You know, like we'll say a guy walks into a pub. We know what's coming. We know that there's a line here.
Yeah.
We know that our expectations are going to be played with. Someone's going to build them up and then deliver something else, and we're going to get a laugh, or you know, or not. But that language of jokes, it just doesn't exist in Japan. They've got comedy, of course. They've got just as much comedy as we have, but. It doesn't work the same way. It's not based around the same structures in language. So I'm trying to explain this to my mum and dad when we go for our dinner once a week over to my mum's, and my family are like, my mum and dad are from Liverpool, so they never shut up. Everything's about, like, you know, ribbing on each other and, you know, making a joke out of this and whatever. And I have to try and explain to them that a lot of this stuff is just flying over Tomo's head. And if you want to include her, you might have to explain your joke, and like saying that to a Scouser is like stabbing him or something. You have to explain your joke. And Tom was like looking at me bemused, and my dad doesn't know what to do, and he's saying, you don't understand jokes. And Tom was saying, well, I do, but it's the language that you use here that we don't get. And he goes, all right, giraffe walks into a pub. And I'm going, Dad, you can't teach her by saying it again and again. And he said, right, okay, all right, two nuns go down this alley. And I'm thinking, shut up, Dad. This is not helping. And anyway, I did digress there. But trying to explain stuff to Tomo in that way, like the peach stone, that was hard work, man. That was hard work.
God, so I can imagine.
Anyway, process. Jesus Christ.
Yes, your process. Because obviously, you started like sort of just pen and ink and stuff, but you've moved to digital. Have you totally moved to digital now?
I personally have been digital for quite some time now.
Oh.
yeah.
Like the lawnmower man.
Yeah, like Auto Man. I go around corners at 90 degrees. years ago, I got one of my first sort of jobs with computers, really, was just working in a graphics studio. And they had a really old Wacom like tablet, the old grey ones with the rattly plastic. And I saw it in this office and nobody was using it. And every so often, like, somebody would say, I need to use the Wacom for 5 minutes. And then they'd use it and then they'd put it away. And I thought, geez, if I had that, I'd use it all the time, you know. And I just said, listen, can I swap my mouse for that so I can get used to how it works? And that was it. It was just mine then, you know. So I just used it for about 4 or 5 years and I got used to the movement of that as opposed to using a mouse. So I think it's like, God, it must be 15 years since I used a mouse, I think. But ever since then, I've just invested in them myself. You know, I thought, right, okay, well, I'll make the leap to like a better Intuos. And then I made the leap to a small Cintiq. And then I've got like a monstrous one at the minute in my like studio. Same studio, it's my dining room. But so I've got this 27-inch thing, but it's like, I've got this 27-inch thing. See that?
Yeah. I didn't even go there when you said I've got a monstrous one. I just left it. I let it lay there. Yeah.
Well, it looks monstrous.
It looks like a monster.
the digital thing. I've always been fascinated by it, but I've always kept up the drawing, and Inktober's a big help with that, I think, you know. The fact that you can, everyone else is doing it at the same time, you're like, okay, right, you know, I do need to get back to it. And when I decided I was doing comics, I did draw the first one or two, like penciled it, then inked it, then took it in and colored it into Photoshop and stuff. But when it finally came to doing the stuff where it was just me doing it, I thought I've got so many artists that I would like to draw like, and everyone's got the same, you know, big list of like, I want to do an Otley piece and I want to do this, I want to do that. I want to be Adam Hughes. you want to be all these people, but when you sit down and start doing your own stuff, I don't think you can ignore all the experience you've had in other areas. And I've found things helpful from the days when I was a sign writer, even doing when I'm making comics, you know, like taking vectors and combining them in certain ways to make shadows and all this kind of stuff. And then the graphics career helped that, and working for an agency that did marketing for video games and stuff, that helped as well. So I'm sitting on virtually 20 years of Photoshop experience, and I thought, why aren't I using it? You know, because I'm so much faster. It sounds weird, this, but I'm so much faster drawing in Photoshop than I am with a pad. Because it's just I've got everything to hand, you know. I'm just and then away you go, you know. I still love to draw. I still sit down and I actually, at the end of a really long day drawing, I like to sit and draw just to relax. But the digital side of things, I just thought I would be an idiot to ignore what I know about Photoshop and what I can do and what I can bring to a story with it. And you've probably, if you've looked at some of my stuff there, Dan, like, you probably like spot all the Photoshoppy stuff a mile away. But I do try my best. Well, I mean, I don't mean that in a negative sense, but what Photoshop could bring to comics. Because you remember when computer colouring first came out in comics and it stood out a mile, everything was created, and it was all like, it was too much. There wasn't any sort of contrast anywhere. And of course, you know, this is the day that I always dreamed of, where it was as easy to draw on a computer as it was in a pad. So the setup I'm rocking at home is just like, I've got a MacBook and I plug this Cintiq into it and off I go. But the dream for me has always been, pick up what I'm working on and go somewhere else and get on with it.
Yeah, it's the old coffee shop drawing. Sometimes you need to get out of the house, isn't it? And I think that's what ties you down a bit when you've got a Wacom and stuff like that, doesn't it?
Yeah. Especially,
but weren't you saying just before we came on, you've got a program that turns your iPad into a drawing tablet or something?
I've been faffing with this. After I finished Vortex, I took the money and invested a bit. So I got this new MacBook and I got an iPad because I'd read so much about people using Procreate and whatever else. And I'm probably like Dan is at the minute, where we're asking everybody about how does it work with this? And you just want to get your hand on one and see how it works for you, you know.
I can remember
Yeah, and it's there. So I took the plunge, got the ridiculous sized one with all the storage, and I haven't put it down since. It's frigging brilliant. Yeah. I thought it'd never live up to what Photoshop does, really. But there's a little video that this guy's put together, and it basically explains what exists in terms of the instructions that are already inside the app.
What program are you using? Are you using Procreate on the
I'm using Procreate, but there are so many others that are really, really handy as well. Like, for example, what do you call it? I found this one that's a bit like SketchUp. You know, when you create shapes that you want to sort of like be able to draw over to get something. Like, it's a lot easier to draw a car if you've got reference, but if you've drawn it from a mad angle, if you change your reference to what you want, then great. You know, I'm not saying be a tracer in any way. I don't particularly like that, but if I need that reference of something that I've invented, but I don't know what it looks like from this angle or whatever, SketchUp's perfect for that. I used to do that with Lego. I used to just make some stuff out of Lego, like a rough shape for a spaceship or something. And then when you need that particular angle, you can just look at it in a particular angle and away you go. I guess that's why people use maquettes a lot and models.
Yeah.
Can you do one
straight into, like, you can draw a whole comic page in Procreate, like, not sort of like do the lines and then put it into Photoshop. You can do it all on the pad.
A whole comic page in Procreate, yeah.
Now, okay.
The guys who I've been working with, Storm King, they have a template of what you can do, but you can open a PSD in Procreate and you can save it out as a PSD.
That's brilliant.
And something that's been around for a million years and I never used till this week, and I was jumping around the room because I was that happy with it. AirDrop. Have you ever used AirDrop?
I use it for photographs if I'm taking pictures, for an article. Yeah. Yeah, and you just drop it from your phone to your iPad. Yeah, right, it's not even Bluetooth, is it? It's just
It's literally, if you stood by your computer, you can drop something into AirDrop and it just goes bzz, ping, and it's fast as anything. I'd no
yeah,
idea.
It's pretty good. Yeah.
But I dropped a 600 DPI image that I did the other day. It was this commission for a Hellboy that I was doing, and it's massive. And I dropped it into AirDrop, and it was there in 10 seconds. I thought, I can just dive onto Photoshop now, and I'm in.
You put that commission on social media recently, didn't you, Dave?
Yeah.
Looks awesome. Okay. Yeah, it looks awesome.
It was just like somebody wanted a picture of Hellboy and said, do what you do, and I sort of thought, oh, that's nice. They're the best jobs.
That's a dangerous thing to ask you.
Yeah.
I sent him a piece of paper with a lot of blood on it.
What?
But it's got that good now that I've bought some tatty little drawing tablets over the years. I had this Samsung one for a while that you could use Photoshop on it, but it was a real chore to sort of get to any of the functions. But the iPad and Procreate it's the best it's been. So far, I was phoning around about getting the Wacom, the portable Wacom Cintiq. And I've had my eye on that for years because it's Wacom and because I trust what they do, really. I was just hearing so much stuff about the iPad. I just thought, I can't ignore it now. I'm going to have to go and try it.
Well, there's definitely one in my future. It'll probably be the far future, knowing my paper round. But your brain will definitely be one that I pick.
Oh yeah, by all means. I'm still learning with it. When you first pick up Procreate, you're like, I can see that some people might use it. Oh, it's nice, you know. But and then after a week, you're going, oh, I'm just gonna pick it up again. And then after another week, you can't put the thing down because it's like you just want
to
be on it.
Best way to learn a program is to use it as well. That's how, with the graphic design stuff that I've done, that's always the best. Just use the program rather than I've never been one to read loads of manuals or watch loads of tutorial videos and stuff. No. They're cool when you want to learn, specific things. I find just actually just using the program's the best.
Yeah.
Best way, isn't it?
If you do, you guys follow? There's an artist. I don't know how to pronounce his name, but I think it's Eric Canetti.
I met him in New York. He's amazing. Yeah.
He's a phenomenal artist, isn't he? He's got real nice, natural sort of loose line to whatever he's drawing, and he recently has been posting a lot of Procreate stuff, and you can see you can see how he's gone from I'm not sure about this, I'm a bit wary, and you can see how he's bit by bit he's embracing
tentative steps. and yes, then right, like, yeah, yeah. Yeah, they get a handle of it.
Yeah,
he's
yeah,
got a really interesting style, real
yeah.
sharply done, amazing you know, angles he uses. So,
yeah, some of his stuff reminds me of a bit of a, is it Kim Jong-gi? You know, yes. when he's got like crazy oh, yes. angles, yeah. you know.
Yeah. I always crossed like, a bit with Neil Adams or something like that as well. There's, you can yeah, see there's yeah. a lot of, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, I really love his stuff.
There's that one shot that I always keep in mind from one of Kim Jong-gi's sketchbooks where he draws the interior of a car, but he draws the entire interior from one viewpoint. You know, he's got that sort of fisheye lens type
yeah.
of
yeah, yeah.
feel to the thing he's drawing. And he's that's one of the things he's really naturally good at, that sort of almost like yeah. forced perspective mm. type of thing.
And he's on a whole other level, that guy. He's fucking great.
He is, isn't he? Yeah.
He's like a printer, isn't he? He's like, you just plug him in and he goes. There's no sort of like messing yeah. about. He's got it in his head already and he just starts. Oh, he's, yeah. He's
he sort of works from one corner of a page and just like fills out the whole page, isn't he? Isn't
he? Oh,
yeah. You know,
he's
like that, isn't he? Yeah.
He was at a table at that San Diego that I went to that time, 2014. And he was opposite Adi Granov.
Okay.
You know, he does all, yeah. a lot of the covers yeah. and stuff like that. He did like the famous sort of Iron Man three-point landing thing. And there was just this massive crowd around Kim Jong-gi's table. Like, there's nobody talking to Adi Granov. And, and I thought, who's at this table here? And I went over and I thought, oh, God, it's him. And I didn't have enough money or anything. And I thought, I don't give a shit. I've got to get something off him. You know, like, I've got to... And to be honest, I would have spent the entire like con just sat watching what he was putting into these books. Because anybody who bought anything, he would just start. And I'm thinking, how does he even have that many characters in his head? Never mind be able to draw them.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, and New York last year, he was sat next to Sienkiewicz, so you can imagine what that bit, you couldn't get down that
high.
Oh,
life. God, yeah.
Yeah, it's like constant. Yeah.
I liked how after about like an hour of me stood watching him, somebody else was in the queue saying, oh, could you draw this for me? And it was Adi Granov. And he thought, right, I'm going to have to go and see what this is, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, nice. So I'll finish the iPad thing. I've discovered this thing. It's been around for a while, but I've been umming and ahhing about it because of the cost. But there's an app called AstroPad. And if I wasn't working in with this particular comic that I'm working on and getting a decent amount of pay for it, I wouldn't invest in something like this because it's not cheap. I think it's $78 for a year. You have to get a subscription.
Okay.
There is a free one, but it's really limited. But essentially, what it is is you just plug it in and it's a Cintiq for your... it mirrors your monitor and you sort of shrink this sort of frame around your monitor until it totally surrounds Photoshop. And that's it. You can use Photoshop, but it gives you like thousands of gestures and stuff like that. So it works very like Procreate, but it's Photoshop and it's running on your MacBook. So I'm, like I said, we're heading over to Japan in about a week or so. So my little lad can meet his grandparents for the first time and stuff like that.
And nice.
I like to be able to work while I'm there if I can. And the last time I was there, I took my old like Intuos, my Wacom and stuff, and dabbled in my father-in-law's office. But if I've got this iPad now, you know, Tomo's told me that there's a nice little library around the corner where I can go and sit and get some work done. But I can actually use it with my Mac as well, which is just phenomenal. So
it's brilliant, isn't it?
Awesome.
Yeah,
brilliant.
I'm slightly worried about not having Wacom to hand, but
you'll live. You'll live. It's a modern world. It's a modern world. And we have learned so much from you this week, Dave.
Too much, mate.
That's brilliant, man. Yeah,
you are. Well,
you don't realise, but we've just been texting each other, going, "This is going really well." It's like we tend to do that a bit, yeah. But it's been really good, man. Yeah, we'll definitely have to have you back.
Yeah.
Oh god, yeah.
Well, let me go to the toilet first.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, do you want any more off my list? Do you want any more stuff?
Go on, one more.
Go on, give us one more.
I'm going to Japan.
Hey.
That's about it, I think. Yeah. honestly, mate, I think I've talked too much. Let's get on with what you guys talk about. Because this is odd for me. Because every time
it's good.
What do you normally do? You press the you used to put a joke out every week, didn't you?
Yeah, I hit stop. Now here's my confession. Now I put this on the list. I didn't know what I was going to say it or not. I've not listened to any podcasts, including your good podcast, for a good few weeks.
So that was Dave Kennedy, and he'll never be on the show again.
Yeah, and the reason being, I'd listen to it when I'm working, And right. when I finished Vortex, I was that mentally knackered that I've just had a couple of months off. I've just stuck to like doing a commission here and there, you know, sat on my iPad in the front room or something. In fact, you can blame the iPad because I'm not at my desk. So
we don't blame anyone because, like, because I listen to a lot of podcasts and I wait until they build up for a bit and I like binge listen or when I'm working and stuff. We don't.
We get all this all the time. People always say this, and I haven't listened to the last few, and we go, don't worry about that. We're not, you know. We're not angry.
Hold on, I've just got a WhatsApp off you, you prick. Oh, God. I'm sorry.
It's when you start getting the photos you want to worry.
Yeah, I mean, yours is, up until that particular point, yours was the only one that I'm sat waiting for, really. I went back on the, what's the Australian guys?
I listened to them.
They mentioned you.
Radioactive Lounge.
That's them. Yeah, I went back and binged those guys, and I was really sad when I'd caught up because I'm thinking I've got a week now. I've got to wait, and I thought that's two. That's the only two that I've. I think like, oh God, I've got to wait now. So that's why you get the hit stop on How to Bum a Wolf.
That's a good show. That. Like that's that. A that really good show. That.
It's got a limited shelf life, though, to be fair.
And I got fed up with adverts for Blue Apron. I thought it was inappropriate. Anyway, Dave is a legend. He's going to stick with us for the rest of the show. And shout out to you, Dave. But do we have any other shout outs, gents?
Yeah, I've got a few.
Go for it.
I went to a few things yesterday. I had a bit of a day of comics. I went to a signing. It's the fifth anniversary of Titan Comics, something like that, at Forbidden Planet. And I went and met past guests and our pals. Jason Wilson was there and Monty Nero. So I got to have a chat with him. Dan Boltwood would have been there, but he was late and didn't get there in time. So big shout out to those
more
two guys.
More than enough goodness Jason with those two, Monty Nero and Jason.
Yeah.
Top
star. Yeah. They put their work in. Both were doing sketches and people were chatting to them. It's nice to see, actually. Yeah. It's Forbidden Planet do put the odd good comic signing on. They are worth going to because they, you know, it's all right. I like it there. Big shout out to Dave Broughton. Slaughterhawk is on its way. And someone dropped out due to some timing issues around a story I was doing for a charity anthology, Nottingham One, and Dave has stepped up and he's doing it. So,
how about dude?
It's very, and I've sent you the pages. I'll send you a couple of the pages he's working on. And, it's only a four pager. I think he'll have it done by the end of the week.
He doesn't hang about, does he?
He doesn't, Dave, does he? No. Yeah, I dropped out from Coventry back to my house the other day and I was kept entertained by chatting to Dave on the phone. So thanks, Dave. So watch out for Slaughterhawk. That's coming. Also, Ian Ashcroft is doing another story for Little Heroes with me now. Ian contacted me. And find Ian on Instagram. He puts some amazing stuff out.
Great stuff.
And,
he's really,
really
prolific.
Really lovely. Yeah. He really is, isn't he? He does some great art.
He does.
He's he's just done a Soho Red for us, isn't he? So for the fan art page, which is gorgeous. What are you going to say, Dan? Sorry, mate.
He really flicks between styles. Like, he really changes. He's doing one thing, and next minute it's really well done.
Some really sort of lovely, lush pencils on his work as well. The texture he gets with pencil work and pen and stuff is really nice. So he's doing a two-pager for Little Heroes with me, which I couldn't be more pleased about. And he's a super nice guy. So interesting to see what that is. So I went to the signing yesterday, and then afterwards I met my pals Adrian and Amri Hashimi. Mr. Harrow is there, being as entertaining as usual, and a new pal of mine, Jamal Swift, and they were in, because I'm so arty now, they were in a dance film competition, which I did hint I might do a little homage to and just do a version of it myself, kept us entertained. I sent you the film over, didn't I, guys? Did you ever look at it? It's so good.
I didn't have a chance to look at it,
Yeah, I'm hoping they're about to announce the winner. So a big shout out to those boys and Amri. We had a great night. Adrian's done is busy working on a comic which I will share with you soon, and is gorgeous as well. So yeah, good few days of comics for me, and a little bit of a secret at the moment. Something might be big is bubbling for me, so I shall let you know in the next couple of days. There you go.
Yeah, keep your ears out.
Good. What about you guys?
I've got one. I'm loathe to mention his name again, but we have to, and that is Matt Garvey. He's putting he's putting his money where his big fat mouth is. I don't think he says it so vitriolic like me, But then again, I am his nemesis.
I think I might have inadvertently started that, by the way, because I've written the introduction to Devil in Disguise, the trade, and in it I might have included that you are his mortal enemy.
Yeah.
So, which did make me laugh.
Yeah.
And then I suggested that that might be a comic, and he texted me saying, "Oh, I'm having to think about that. That'd be really funny if I did a comic about
and
that, me."
Knowing him, it'll be a comic in a couple of months.
Yeah.
He's a prolific creator, but more than that, he just loves comics and he wants people to get into comics. So he is putting together an anthology for first-time creators. So if you haven't made a comic before, he wants to put an anthology together for you for your work. And he does it because everyone should have a go at making a comic. So he just loves doing it.
You agree? Yeah.
So if you've always wanted to try to make a comic, or just wanted to collaborate, you know, maybe you've listened to this show and you've thought about, you know, you've been doodling away, but you just want to try working on a short, like a short 4 or 5 pager, or you know, one page is a perfect way to start. And Matt's literally going to be funding this, isn't he? So, you know,
I think he's paying the print costs and stuff, isn't
he's
he?
He's paying the print costs. He just wants to get a lot of people together and like have fun making comics. So if you go to @MattGarvey1981 on his Twitter, it's his pinned tweet, which is there's more details there, because he uses the Miller World forums quite a lot. He's a big Mark Miller sort of fan, isn't he? So you'll find the link with more information. But definitely, if you want to, you know, if you've listened to this show and you think, "Oh, I've always wanted to, but I'm not too sure," get in touch with him and just get making comics. So, yeah, and that's my one. And I might as well say it. Fuck you, Matt.
Yeah,
I was being too nice.
I would pay good money for a comic about you versus him. Yeah. It would just be brilliant. Yeah, like trying to
murder
each other.
Got the photo of you two swinging each other.
Ours is one of those classic wrestling rivalries that there'll be documentaries about in 20 years when people discover that in real life we're like best friends.
He just puts stuff out, and your replies are often "fuck you." Yeah. It just makes me laugh.
Yeah, but he's making great comics, and he wants other people making comics.
Yes, he is. Yes. There you go.
Any
that's
other
enough
shout-outs?
Niceness.
That's Daniel? That's it from Nice Corner.
None to me.
So
I usually have a shout-out, and I remember it like 20 minutes after we finish recording. So,
I will tell you what we should say. We should say, if you're at Nice on Saturday, come and see. I'll be there. And Imber's going to be there, Side Z, Ken Reynolds, there's lots of people going to be at that. So Nice is looking to be a good venue, and there's a lot of great guests there. Donny Cates and Don McGregor are going to be there, so pop along to that in Bedford. And if you're about on the Sunday in central London from 12 o'clock onwards, you can get into the Comic Mart for free and buy a load of cheap comics, and we're going to be there. So come down and see us.
We're going to be there. There's going to be a bunch of us there. We might even get some audio of what bargains or fantastic comics people have picked up. So there might be a bit extra in next week's show. You never know.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. Looking forward to that. So I've got my little list ready. Have you done your list yet, Vince?
I haven't. I've got to add to the list, but I really can't wait. I'm really surprised how excited I am about this.
Yeah, it's a great place, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, comics are too expensive. We all know that. But you go there, you can get 5 comics for £1 at that venue.
Yeah.
Yeah. And really good.
I mean, it is nice when you've got a list of things.
I think the Mighty Prolix is going to be there.
Is he?
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he's messaging me today. Yeah,
it's nice when you write a couple of titles out, though, and then you have the hunt. It's just really good fun. Anyway, from old Dirty
can
Paper.
Can I just jump in a sec, guys?
Go on. Come back. Yeah, go on.
What is your definition of a shout-out with regard to this show?
You don't have to shout it, but like...
You don't have to shout it.
No, I mean, like...
If you just want to say hello to someone, you can say hello to someone.
Yeah, go on, do it.
Yeah.
Right, because I've got one, if that's all right.
Go for it.
I'd like to give a shout out to you three, because I sit here in this exact same seat, listening to those three voices.
Trousers around his ankle.
creams at the ready, and I'm used to it being a passive experience. I'm used to it being, you know, me sitting here and listening to you guys and chuckling along and whatever else. And I might get the odd mention, and I go, "Oh, I was mentioning that," and I'll tell the wife, "Come over and listen to this," and everything. And I can't tell you what you guys, how much it matters what you guys do to people who are sitting there who don't know what they're doing with comics, because
It's very kind of you, man. But yeah, I don't think I don't understand, we deserve it, but it's very kind of you, man. It's
what you're doing is fantastic, and you just need to keep doing it. So my shout out is to the three fools who I sit and listen to constantly.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, mate.
I'm
all the best.
Yeah,
and
I went a bit
explain
quiet
to me
then,
why they call you Captain. Explain to me why they call you Captain Beefheart later.
Oh, dear God, man.
Anyway.
I'm starting to get emotional there. So let's, from old comics, or like us three comic wankers, to comics that you lovely people should be reading in the forthcoming weeks and months. Who wants to go first with the recommendation?
You've got two, haven't you, V?
Yeah,
I'll do a quick one to start off with.
Bookender space.
Yeah. How can I say no to that?
Is that like Human Centipede 4?
Yeah, it's like you and me high-fiving over the top of him, Dave. That's how I see it.
Oh,
the Eiffel Tower.
I actually feel sick. I feel physically sick. in a sexy way. Anyway,
sexy sick.
Yeah. So the first.
That's the name of my second concept album. That I decided. Sexy sick. Good time.
Oh dear. Anyway, game face on. Now, my first recommendation this week, a quick one. It's the sixth volume of a series that I have loved and maybe in my best of. Come the end of the year.
Nice.
And what would a week, judging by this year, what would a week on this show be without a Europe comics recommendation?
Oh, I'm doing one as well, you fucker.
Yeah, right, but okay, I mean, yours will be more in depth. Mine is just a reiteration that people should be checking out the series Isabella.
Yes. Yeah.
So.
Isn't it on sale at the moment?
Yeah, on Comixology, yeah.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
The books are about $3.99 normally, but they're all like $1.99.
That's good, isn't it?
And they're all like 50 pages, I think. Each chapter's about 50 pages. And there's six volumes of this, and the sixth one is the final one. So, and it's Butterflies in the Mist. I actually saved it. I bought it and I saved it for like a long journey so I could just devour it, and I did. It's an amazing sort of medieval story about a female Japanese samurai warrior and the journey she goes on, like exploring her heritage. There's mysticism, there's religion, there's uber violence, like people get mashed up in seriously, you know, it's brutal when it has to be, it's gentle when it has to be, it's really poignant in places, and it really gets the characters are the main thing. And I'm all about characters when it comes to my comics, and there's a motley crew sort of group of like warriors that she ends up taking this journey with, and she ends up in Ireland for the last two volumes, and volume five sort of ended on a bit of a shocking cliffhanger. I would read out the synopsis, and I don't want to for this because the synopsis for book six kind of spoils some of the stuff that I think you should go into not knowing in the previous volumes.
So it's not all ages then, is it?
It's definitely not all ages.
Because there's almost a cartoony feel to the central character, is it?
I would say that the artwork in this book is something that I wish my style would eventually attain, you know, in my dreams. There's an attention to detail. Because it's a historical epic and they're dealing with sort of Celtic warriors, you know, Japanese warriors, there's like pirate ships, I think in volume two. And it's just amazing. Just a brilliant, this is a brilliant sort of end to the series. Five and six are kind of like two sort of, you know, once it gets going with the final sort of battle, it does not let up. And I just absolutely just burned through it. Like I say, my recommendation is start at volume one. If you read volume one and like you like the characters, I mean, I think you'd be insane not to absolutely love this series anyway. But as soon as you start, you're going to want to read the next and the next and the next. There's ghosts, there's demons, there's druids, there's awesome sort of like samurai like fights and stuff like that. And the action is so kinetic. There's these angel-like characters like flying in the sky, and one character is like jumping from one angel to another, sort of killing them as they're moving up in the air, And the way that that scene plays out was just phenomenal. I was, you know, I think I may have been drooling when I was looking at the pages. So, yeah, definitely. It was one of the, I know there was the Swordmaster was one of the first books that I got that put Europe Comics on my radar. This was the one, this is the series that clarified them. I know we've talked about a lot of the other range of their books and they're putting their constant stuff, but if you haven't checked out this one yet, definitely check it out. It's only available in digital because that's what, because
that's their shizzle, isn't it?
I think it may be a Spanish book. The writer is Raul and the artist and colorist is Gabor. I probably murdered those names. The only downside about this series is I wish I could have a printed, collected omnibus edition that I could just pick up and read whenever I wanted. That's the only downside, because this is, it's beautiful storytelling. I mean, if you just look, I think I posted some covers on Twitter last week, you know, just four of the volumes, and just every cover's just a work of art. So that's my first one, Isabella. Check it out on Comixology or wherever you get your digital comics, and it's Europe Comics, and I just love it. So there you go. Cool. That's the first one.
Nice one.
Brilliant.
Good. Who's next?
Daniel. Go on, Dan.
Yeah, I'll go up. This is another interesting one. I came across this on Twitter. A chap I follow, Robert Carey, who goes by the Twitter handle at Mansloth.
Yeah. Doesn't he do a RoboCop series?
Yeah, I'm sure he does. Because he's got a RoboCop picture.
I follow him. Yeah.
Wow, yeah. And he tweeted this comic called Cruel Sunset, and it was a download link to a Dropbox for the first issue. And I downloaded it. It's absolutely great. One of the things, it doesn't seem to have any of his contact details in there or any kind of legal stuff. And I thought that would have been a kind of a quick go-to. Because say if someone picked this up and thought, oh, great, this is awesome, I want to talk to Robert. It's got none of his details on there, which I'd have thought,
okay,
come on, man, you want to stick that on there. But that aside, it's a fantastic cyberpunk comic, and Robert's done everything aside from the lettering, which is done by a chap called Kevin Keane. It's just a joy to behold. It's just every sort of page and panel is just jam packed with detail, and he's built this kind of cyberpunk esque world that's inhabited by the main character, the Cruel Sunset, which is like a call sign. And it, when it first kicks off, it's some horrific sort of terrorist style incident happened, and she's apparently to blame for it, and she's like public enemy number one. And then it jumps back a couple of weeks before it's all kicked off, and it starts to tell the story of how she's got into it. It's really interesting. I mean, as a business model, maybe releasing a comic for free and then seeing how it goes down and people share it is one way of doing stuff. But it's really great stuff. It's a massive long link, so we have to put it in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
So you can click on it,
okay,
read it and see what you think for yourself.
Oh, nice one. I must look at this.
Fantastic comic. Yeah, really enjoyable.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
And he's definitely a creator to look out for, because I swear he works on the RoboComic that... RoboCop comic that came out. Is it IDW that have done the new series?
I'm not sure, actually. I'm not a catcher-upper of the RoboCop stuff, but it might be.
There's a RoboCop reference in it. In the second to last page, there's a chap with two young women, and it says, I'd buy that for a euro.
I think we'll have to try and get him on the show just so we can have him and Dan talk about RoboCop for an hour.
Yeah,
RoboCop.
You do your own podcast.
Yeah,
I think that covers a bit of a nod to it as well, isn't it? With the main character stepping out of the car.
Stepping out of the car.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
This comic would be an absolute nightmare for a flatter. When you see the artwork, you'll see there's a couple of double page spreads, which is like a cityscape with hundreds of people and every building super detailed. It's like, oh. Yeah. fantastic. Great stuff.
Nice.
Real.
Who's next?
Dave, do you want to guess?
Who's left?
Do you want to have a go?
Who's left? Well, I suppose. I haven't really got any, to be honest. I did have... all I wanted to use this opportunity for was to see if each of you had read these things that I thought you'd like, if that makes sense.
Oh, okay. So, like this. Yeah, we like this. Yeah, go on.
Is that any good? I thought you've answered already, Tony, with Echo. By Terry Moore. I thought that might be something you might.
Yeah, I like Terry Moore's stuff. Joy. Yeah, and he's a nice guy as well. I've met, and he's quite quiet, but you get him in a conversation. He's a really interesting guy. Yeah, really fond of his.
I think that's a very good description of his work as well.
Yeah,
it is kind of quiet. It's not, you know, massively all explodey this and whatever else. And I mean, it's literally like the story of a couple of women driving around a lot. Hmm. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I just thought it was really
He gets faces so right, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah.
He gets people talking really well. You know.
Yeah. He's got acting down pat with the.
He really has, doesn't he? Things, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So that was one, and I have a vague cloudy memory of Dan mentioning this one at some point, but I thought some Dan might enjoy did you ever read Reaper, Dan?
Is that Kirkman Cliff Rathburn?
Cliff Rathburn is he does the colouring, doesn't he, for Invincible, or did he, or the inking? I can't remember what he did.
Yeah,
he's done that. Yeah,
and I think he did work the grey tones on The Walking Dead as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's where he's from.
That's
where
I know his name from. Yeah. 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 Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think but as far as I'm aware, he's done the art on this. Now it's very much along the Otley lines.
He did. Cliff Rathburn's artwork is insane. Like
it's good, isn't it?
People have like their heads like sliced in half, like the cut down the middle, and you'll see almost every layer of the human system.
Yeah. Like, do you know all that fun stuff in Invincible, Dan? It's all that.
Yeah.
Nice.
I believe there's a Reaper 2 out as well, but I have both of them.
Yeah,
is it as good as the first?
Yeah, his artwork stays the same. It's violence, it's sex, it's just brutality,
and it's just it's kinetic as hell, isn't it? Yeah. It's just like the action's brilliant.
Yeah, he also did work on you know, the I think it was they're in the Invincible universe. There's that character Britt.
Yes, Britt.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tony, yes. Yeah, I like him. Yeah,
I think Tony Moore did one of them, because he's had several different books. Tony Moore did one of them, and Cliff Rathburn did the art on another one of the Brit stories.
I think that makes sense.
I think it might be Red, White, and Blue. I can't be sure. I know I've got it somewhere.
Because he's very close to Otley in his style, isn't he? You can see he's been influenced there.
Yeah.
That sort of like really square jawed.
He didn't do Battle Pope, did he? He's not the guy who did Battle Pope.
No, probably might have done.
I think that was Tony Moore. Tony Moore did.
Oh, right. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's Kirkman again. It's Kirkman writing it, and it's
I mean, there's not that much story to it.
No, there's nothing there. But these are a part of that pile that we mentioned earlier, where if somebody comes to the house and say, "Oh, you like comics?" And I'll go try this. You know? Echo's on there, and Reaper's on there, and the other one, which again, I'm pretty sure you'll have read, but I thought Vince would have enjoyed Next Wave, Agents of Hate.
Oh, so good.
I haven't read that. I actually haven't read that.
Warren Ellis. Yeah.
That's been on my wish list for a very long time.
Vince, it is the balls. All right. It actually it's one of the few comics other than the one of, what was it called? Big Trouble in Little China. It's one of the only two comics that's ever made me laugh out loud. And it's
the bits with Machine Man make me laugh as well. It's
he's fucking great, isn't he? But it's hard to explain what it is. You're better just sitting and going through it. But
you get a cheap trade somewhere of it, I reckon.
Definitely, every time I'm in Waterstones, it's always in there for some reason. But Immonen does the art, Stuart Immonen, who's just freaking brilliant. You know, you can do more with like a line and it takes me 3 days to
He's becoming a kind of like modern legend, isn't he, Immonen? Over the past like 5 years.
His stuff on Star Wars was just God almighty. Yeah. I prefer that to some of the films.
Yeah.
Next Wave, Agents of Hate is just...
I was thinking about getting that for a long time, and then you know when something's on your wish list and it sort of fades a little bit into the background, but now that's gone straight back up to the top again. So.
Mate, I'd wait till the Mart for that. You might get a cheap trade of that at the Mart. Hanging on for that.
It's been out for a good while, hasn't it? Mm. So
It was two trades, and then they did it as one together, I think, didn't they?
Yeah. Yes. And I didn't know anything about it until Mike, the guy who I work with, suggested it to me and said, "What, you haven't read that? What's wrong with you?" So
amazing. And it's a big favourite. Yeah,
the last one I had, which I know you've mentioned before, but I didn't know because I've missed those few shows. I don't know whether you've caught up with it, but have you all read Lock and Key?
I have not. No, I haven't read Lock and Key, and I know it's the first volume is on Comic House.
Comic House.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Lock and Key is one of those. It's like The Wire, or it's like Game of Thrones or something like that. Well, it's not, but it's like it in that the first one or two aren't exactly floating your boat really, but by the time they get to the end, you will be in tears. You will have enjoyed every last moment of that last issue. It's phenomenal.
Who's the artist? Is it Gabriel
Hernandez?
Yeah.
Is it Hernandez? Or Rodriguez.
Rodriguez, yeah. I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, he's amazing. Yeah.
And I wasn't particularly taken with it, how he sort of like drew people in the first issue or so, but by the time I got to the end, I was just he's like a god.
Mm.
Yeah. Because you realise, oh, he's thought this out. Oh, he was one of the first people to use SketchUp to build the house that is constantly used in all the things.
Ah, okay.
And use it as reference himself to get everything detailed and right. And
nice.
Is he doing a fantasy book now? Is it the Sword of Ages or something like that? Yeah. Top of my head. Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, yeah. The combination of him and is it Joe Hill? He's obviously Stephen King's lad because it's just Stephen King. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But
he's so good at it. And remember, we went for that.
Only
drink
Joe Hill can do an ending. Oh, what have I said there? Controversial.
Well, the ending is one of the high points for me, and
I want
you know when you get that urge to read something again, you think I'll go back and I'll just look at that those few pages because they were the ones that really hit me.
Mm. Yeah,
Lock and Key is one of the ones where you realise you have to read the whole thing again for it to hit you.
Mm.
Yeah, I've got the first trade. My son bought me the first trade a couple of years ago. Now it's on the pile. I'll get to it. Yeah,
it's one that's always recommended to a lot of people. And like,
we've had it 4 or 5 times.
I think all of us on here need to read it all at some point.
I'd highly recommend it. It's the guy who came for that beer with us that time, Tony, after the when we met up in London.
Oh yeah,
Jim. He's that's the first comic he thrusts into people's hand if they ask
what
are comics. And he lives his life by it. But he's right. It's just beautiful. It's a really beautiful story. It's really good.
Nice. Right, Tony, follow that up.
Okay, so I was chatting to Irina, who is our drug dealer for Europe Comics, for anyone who doesn't know. I write her an email that says, oh my fucking god, that is the best thing I've ever read in my life. And every week she sends back, oh, we'll try these 18 comics, and then one of them will be again the best thing I've ever read in my life. So I was chatting to her about Glorious Summers Southbound, which I did a review of recently, which is written by Zidru, who's and she said, right, if you like that, you need to read The Muse, which she sent through on a Dropbox link to us, which we've shared, actually. Have you guys looked at this yet, by the way? Have you seen
The Muse yet?
No, yeah. I haven't looked at Muse. Well, I downloaded it, but I've had a quick skim through it, but I haven't read it.
It's the one with a lot of pubic hair on the cover.
Yeah.
Good times.
Good times. Yeah. And it's turn of the century pubic hair, which is obviously more... a bit busier on the page. It's script by Zidru, art by Oriel, and it's 64 pages full color, and it's essentially set in Barcelona, and there's an artist studio, and it's set in 1939, that part of it is anyway, the bookend to it, and there's an aging Catalan painter, and he's sitting there with his model, and he shares with her the mystery of his best friend. Now his best friend is this forgotten genius of Catalan modernism, a man called Vidal Balaguer, and he vanished on New Year's Eve 1899. A few months earlier, his muse, who was a woman called Mar, also disappeared, and there's this sort of big mystery that's set up around why this was. And the book actually opens on a Vidal and Mar sitting on a rooftop in Spain, in Barcelona, and looking up at the sky. And as soon as that scene opens, you realise how gorgeous this artwork is. It is, it's just absolutely bonkers good painted artwork. And you're sitting there and you flash to this older artist. And he's basically sort of, he goes backwards and forwards a bit. And he's saying, look, this is what really happened. And he's telling this model. And she says to him, look, you've paid for my 2 hours for posing for you. He says, I'll sit here and listen to your story. I don't mind. And he tells her it. And the story goes, and there's a twist to it. About halfway through, you realise why everyone keeps disappearing, and it's not what you'd expect. It presents itself as almost like a sort of faux historical document of an artist in Spain, if you see what I mean. And it has that sort of look to it, but there is something else. There's something sort of slightly magical going on. moments of it are just beautiful. It's like sort of post-impressionism almost. And he draws these sort of square characters, you know, squarely drawn characters in dark suits who look like Spanish gangsters from the turn of the century. Maybe a bit of Gauguin, something like that, a little bit of Picasso in it somewhere, and a little bit of, any of you guys know Sergio Toppi? Do you know that? The artist that?
I don't know.
Yeah. A little bit like that, Dan. It's just that sort of dramatic, sort of painted, solid, angular look to it. But he draws, what he does is he draws the streets and the skies and the rooftops and the bedrooms and the artist studios, this Spanish town, just like beautifully with shadows. He does a lot of the stuff's in nighttime. There's a lot of sort of shadows and lamps and street lamps and candles. And it's just so evocative of that sort of historical setting that he sits in. It's mind-blowingly gorgeous, as if every page, every panel is a painting that could hang on the wall at the Louvre. Do you know what I mean? It's literally that good. So he's chased a bit. So this Vidal is he's chased a bit for the art, for the a painting he's done. In fact, the one that's on the cover of the book, and he's chased by this character who initially you think is this sort of Spanish gangster, but it turns out he's a local police officer and he's the local inspector. And rather than selling, he offers him loads of money for this picture. And he says, no, I can't sell you this picture. And you get this scene where you realize that the picture is not the important thing. It's the possession of the beauty of this woman. And it becomes a sort of abstract idea like that, that what these two men are trying to do is they're kind of trying to possess the soul and the beauty of this sort of very sort of gorgeous, mostly naked, sort of dark haired artist model who is their ideal. You know, it's just almost like a primal sort of selfish urge to possess this woman. And then he just says, no, I'll, rather than you have this painting, I'll draw you. And then it's at that point you think, right, I realize what's going on here, and I won't ruin it, because I think you really need to read it. There's an element of the muse as like a mermaid almost. You know the way the stories of mermaids luring sailors in their ships onto the rocks to crash. There's a little bit of that maybe. And she sort of disappears at one point, and you think, oh, what happened there? And he's saying to his cleaner, where's this and where's that? And it slowly dawns on you. And he says to his to this police inspector at one point, he says, a beach never asked the ocean where it spent the night. And you think, this is such a good line, and this sort of fairy-like quality to this character who he makes love to on the roof of this building, that is kind of like the watershed moment in relation to this sort of magical aspect of it. Really, really, really amazing. There's a kid that walks up to him. He goes to the park and he says, "Look, I don't really know what's going on in my life. I'm going to go to the park." And he goes to the park and he's painting. And this kid walks up to him. This young girl walks up and says, "Your tree is just like the real tree, but it's got something extra." And you have this moment where he says, look, everyone talks to me about art. I'm like this sort of starving, cool artist in Barcelona, but no one has ever summed up the definition of art to me so well as this kid does. And it's just full of little moments like that. Absolutely fucking amazing. It's a one volume and done, so it's slightly longer than their usual books. So usual books, like you said, Vince, are about 48, 50 pages long of art. And that's a kind of an average for an album in France, but this one's 64, so it's slightly longer. But you don't feel that, you know, that it is that sort of much longer than the other things. But it's got an element that art has a magical quality to it, and it does it in an extremely subtle way that you really need to sort of find out. One story, one volume, just fucking perfection, just absolute perfection that you will fall in love with, and you'll think. And she sent me another book by him, which I'm about to start now, but. As we're not sponsored by Europe Comics, they don't pay us any money apart from sending us books to review. But this, every week, everything I read, I read comics every single day. The best thing I read is from Europe Comics at the moment. Yeah, absolutely amazing. So, europecomics.com, go to their mailer, sign up for it as well. Just outstanding. Yeah. There you go. That's my one.
Nice one.
That sounds great.
And now the bookend. My final recommendation was one I got from Comixology. It was one of my four cover picks for this week.
Oh, okay.
I normally do. It's not from a couple of Australian sort of small press creators. Written by Andrew Shaw, art by Will Playden, and they go by Shaw Will Comics. And this is a book called Cul-de-Sac.
Oh, okay.
Which is an original Australian horror story, as it says. And it's even got a little tagline, "What goes around comes around," which I didn't... It really does in this book. Now, it's basically... This is the synopsis, as I said. I was trying to think of a way to put it better, but I don't think I could. It's set in the 1950s, which is a different time. You could leave your front door unlocked. Your children could play outside until dark without a care. Your neighbours all looked after each other. But what went on in those houses when the doors closed? Did the kindly man who tended his roses have a dark secret? What about the young man who lived alone after the war? Or the lady with the strange lights spilling out from her basement each night? The cul-de-sac holds many secrets. And, yeah, I knew nothing about this, apart from seeing the cover, liked it, saw a couple of sample pages on Comixology from the preview. It was $2.49, it's 63 pages, you know, so you're getting it's a decent little anthology, which I didn't expect it to be an anthology. I thought it was going to be a sort of a one entire story. And this, I absolutely adored this book. I absolutely just chewed through it in record time. I've read it a couple of times. But how best to describe it? If you know of the show Tales from the Crypt, then this is the book for you. It really is. Each story is a different sort of twisted horror tale. Like the guy who was looking after his roses, he ends up like burying things to help the soil, shall we say, and that comes back to haunt him. They all have that, you know, that dark sort of the ending that those EC books and Tales from the Crypt and stuff. You know, every story comes with like a sort of stinger at the end, and every one of these stories does. Brilliant, but each of the stories is set in a different house on one street.
Okay.
Which I really liked, and the ending, and it all built up so that when the final story ended, it brought them all together in such a beautiful way that I was just, my jaw just hit the floor, and I just thought, that is genius what they've done there. Because it's horror stories in the, you know, you'll get something supernatural, you know, there's always a slight element of supernatural, there's a little bit of science fiction, you know, there's ghosts, there's monsters, you know, there's strange things going on, but they're different flavours. It's not like the same sort of monstrous stuff going on in this tent, and none of the individual stories are really connected until the through line that brings them all together at the end. The artwork by Will Playden is phenomenal. It's painterly, is very reminiscent, you know, I've seen sort of some of this stuff on the small press sort of scene over here before, you know, these really beautiful sort of painted pages, but each story sort of ends almost with like a splash page. The first splash page, the first story ends, I want that as a print. There are print worthy pages throughout this book.
Does he do the art through the whole thing, Vince?
He does the whole... Yeah, he did the whole work. I think they're sort of like two sort of childhood buddies that just decided to work on a book together.
I've known Andrew Shaw for a while from the old 11 o'clock comics message board.
Was he on there?
Yeah, because... I don't know if you know this, but he's an Australian guy, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he won a quiz show. He won like Wheel of Fortune type quiz show in Australia.
Really?
And he used the money to go to, I've got a feeling it was C2E2 or something like that. And he was on the 11 o'clock podcast, but he's certainly very, we're friends on Facebook, we've been friends for years, but he was very sort of active in that little community.
Yeah.
He's a good guy, a really good guy. Yeah.
And I tell you what, the do come right. Because
good. Yeah.
Every single one, normally we sort of say with an anthology, it can be ups and downs, you know, that, you know, you, and certainly you may like some stories more than others, but there's not a duffer in this whole thing. They're absolutely phenomenal. It was like watching just an amazing season of Tales from the Crypt. I just absolutely adored it.
Just looking at the artwork there, Vince, after you mention it, which I can't do when you're not listening to the podcast in the same time as you guys. But just looking at it, it reminds me of... do you remember Clive Barker's Books of Blood?
Yes.
Everyone ever read them? It's got
read the
same
novels
sort of like...
and then didn't they come out from put them out?
They did. I think I can't remember, it's Dark Horse, but might have been. It's somebody put them out, but it was confused because the Books of Blood, the actual short story like novel, had been out for ages, and I'd done the same. I'd read that.
Yeah, there's like three volumes of it, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it wasn't. Ago. Yeah, it wasn't called that. I think when they released it, they were saying it was like a Hellraiser anthology or something like that.
I've got a feeling it was epic.
Yeah, it might have been. Yeah, actually. But this artwork, Vince in Cul-de-sac, it's reminded me a lot of that.
Yeah,
like you're already on edge because it's supposed to be this beautiful place, but it's creepy.
There's a real creepiness. Yeah. And the first story is completely wordless, so I thought that was how the book was going to be. It's not. Mm. Each story has its own flavour. The last few pages of the book are wordless and build up to one of my favourite last pages of a book that I've seen in quite some time. Once again, I'd love it as a print. I've said this about many books, but you know, this was a pleasant surprise. It is a book that I will reread now and then. I'm definitely, even though I just got it in Comixology, I'd love to know if they've got a printed copy of some kind. I'd love to have it on my shelf. So Cul-de-sac, look for it on Comixology. This came out a couple of years ago. I think it might be last year or year before. Okay.
I know he's been posting about it very recently on his Facebook page, so yeah, it can't be that old. Yeah. Is it a series, is it, or is it a one-off?
No, this is just one and done. It's a one-and-done sort of anthology, 63 pages. I got it for $2.49 on Comixology. There's probably other places. I'll put the link in the show notes. But, I mean, the cover itself has a very sort of movie poster-like quality that certainly I think when people look at it, they might be reminded of things like the posters for Hereditary. That new horror film that's come out. It's got that kind of feel. I think it's come around at the right time. This isn't the same sort of feel as that film, but definitely if you like great sort of horror anthologies that really, I mean, just the storytelling of how it comes around, well worth it. Well worth it. And you'll devour it really quickly. So there you go.
Yeah,
so Cul-de-sac.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Great stuff.
Just bought it.
Oh, good man.
There you go. Wait,
you'll have to message me later and let me know what you thought. Now I'm really worried.
I bought talent as well, as we've been on there.
Brilliant.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. So there you go. Lots of brilliant recommendations. Lots of knowledge thrown down for you. So we hope you enjoyed it, folks. And we certainly enjoyed having Dave on the show. He's welcome back anytime.
Bad time. We've been talking about having you on for donkey
for ages. For ages, yeah.
Just needed an excuse. That's what it is. Yeah. Next time you have a dropout. Next time you have someone who's been sick or something.
You're never an excuse, my love. Never an excuse. But if you want an excuse to email us...
Hey.
Then,
oh, my God. I was even part of one.
How do you feel?
Oh, God. I mean, you know that bit in Infinity War where Spider-Man's hairs are going up on his arm? That's me now, all over. All down my back.
Yeah.
Oh. 6 inches of them.
Oh dear!
All on the main.
If you were horrified by that image, then email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, if you've got any sort of comic events, or if you just want to put us right about something, or tell us that we said a name wrong, that's where you can get hold of us. If you've got any letters for the Awesome Comics Anthology, which is coming along very, very nicely.
We need some letters. We've got loads of listener art, but we could do with a few more letters.
Yeah. So if you want
to be like Mr. Kennedy and write us a letter, then please do.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'll need to do you one for the new one, yeah. I'll make it a dead long one so you don't need to put one in.
Do it a pro story.
Not in crayon this time, though, Dave, if you don't mind.
If you've read the book...
That wasn't crayon.
Oh, God. But you wrote Crayola on it. Anyway, if you've read the book, if you like the stories, if you want to find out more, then write your letter to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com and we'll put it in the book and Tony will answer it because he's the editor of the letters page. God help us.
Yeah. Could I also quickly mention, all of us on the podcast hate injustice of any type.
That's true.
You can get our comic... awesomecomic.bigcartel.com.
If you're interested in the rights of badgers in Southern Devon and we think they're being mistreated, you can also get the Awesome Comics Anthology.
Crisps? Why not buy this comic as well?
I'll tell you what, these two need to work on their segue game. Look, you need to up your game, lads. That's right. I'll test you next week.
I forgot we were going to do that, Dan. I had a load written down. I didn't bring them upstairs with me.
We do a bit more virtual signaling before we pimp our products. Yeah. It's the thing at the moment.
Yeah, so mention a cause and then mention your comic for sale.
Oh, by the way, so selling this.
Yeah.
You should do that. Call it doing a Simon Pegg.
Do you know I suffer from depression? By the way, I'm also in this movie that's about to come out.
Yeah.
You into pegging?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Well, why not buy this?
Oh, God. But if you want to follow us on Twitter, for instance, you can go to @theawesomepod, where we will be announcing some guests and probably like throwing out some Q&As and stuff or retweeting. We haven't done the Kickstarter call out for a couple of weeks.
No,
need to get back on that.
We've all been busy with the old issue 3 of the Awesome Comic podcast, which is going to be out soon.
It's coming out at Nottingham Comic Con on October the 20th. Anyway, God, we are shameless. Welcome to the shameless 5 minutes. But if you use the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast and like us there. And if you just want to talk about comics, making comics, just comic events, or you know, just really a discussion about comics rather than hard sales or anything like that, and you do Facebook, then join the Awesome Comics Talk group, because it's really good discussion that's going on there. And it's not down to us, it's down to the people who are actually taking part. So we just put a page up, and it's brilliant because of other people. So there you go. Much like this show, really. It's you people that make it, not us. We just host it on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. Look, you completely ruined a brilliant segue Ben. Right. Listen to us, awesomecomics.podbean.com. Leave us a review and subscribe on iTunes. We haven't had a review in ages. I've kind of given up.
Ages. Yeah.
I think Dave even left a review on there. It was very nice.
He did, yeah. It was nice. Did I leave one?
Yeah.
When was that?
I don't know. Well, maybe it was a while ago. Maybe it was
I did try doing another one, but it wouldn't let me in.
Maybe it's your brother dressed as you.
Could have been, one of my favourite quotes from TV ever was, you remember the Cook Report? The tubby fella would go around and get people who were in trouble and try and film them, and he was outside this fella's house, and he'd been done for like scamming old women or whatever it was, and he goes up and he took him so much by surprise that the guy just didn't know what to say, and he said, "Are you such a body?" This is like Peter Cook, and he went, "No, I'm not." He said, you just said you were. He said, "No, I'm not." He says, "Well, are you or are you him?" He says, "No, I'm not me." I'm not me. And I thought, how's he going to top that? And he said, "Well, who are you then?" He said, "I'm my brother." I thought, oh my God, does that get any more existentialist? I am my brother. Anyway, carry on.
There's a comic that should be coming out in the next couple of years.
Yeah. I'm not me.
Thank you for listening. If you listen to us on Spotify, thank you very much. And also, if there's lots of other networks like Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
Pod Horatio Hellpop. That's a little clue as to a future guest.
Oh, deep.
There you go. I was going to go straight to the bum sex joke.
There's lots of people just Googling themselves senseless right now.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I contacted Elon earlier today and we had a chat, so it's looking good for a couple of weeks. Yeah.
Speaking of the internet, where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
Ezzohyz. Watch out for Never Write Anything. I've just got a book from Humanoids called Downward to the Earth, Volume 1, by Robert Silverberg. It's an adaptation of Robert Silverberg's novel written by Philip Thoreau. Laura Zuccheri is the artist, and it is fucking amazing. Another fucking amazing European book. I think I'll just give up on English.
I think you just need to have a lie down, Tony. Are you all right in yourself?
Am I what?
Are you all right in yourself? Are you okay?
We need to have a talk. Yeah. Well, I've discovered that your wife hates me, and it's affected me, I think.
She's going to start her own Facebook group soon.
You told me she carries a knife.
In a sock. That's where you
use it.
Right. Did you say where people can find you on Twitter?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
You weren't listening.
Well, fuck you then. Dan.
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic. You can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Brilliant. You can find me on Twitter at Jester Diablo. You can find out more about my comic at theredmassfrommars.com. And thank you again, Dave Kennedy.
Cheers,
for joining
Dave. Yeah,
us.
The ledge.
Yeah.
Yeah. An absolute legend.
If you want to find me online, search for Dehydrated Spinning Blue Peter Cat on YouTube. Which has nothing to do with me, but it's funny as anything.
I'm going to Google that.
Oh, God. Whenever it's someone's birthday, I send them that link. Jesus Christ. Never unsee that. The dehydrated spinning blue Peter cat. Anyway, other than that, if you search for Cherry Sheriff anywhere on social medias, I'll be there. So sniff
and you're racking up the books on Comixology, dude, as well. I looked you up on Comixology, and you've got quite a few on there now, haven't you?
Yeah, it's because they're selling all these Tom Carpenter ones that I've been working on.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with me, but it's nice knowing that the name's out there. So.
Yeah.
Cool.
Nice one. And what the fuck is that?
Listen, Dan, you have to turn the music up, mate. That's what makes it.
Don't.
They play a really fast version of Obladi Oblada. Oh.
Yes, we'll put the link to that. Cause that's great.
And on that bombshell, thank you for listening, folks. Go forth and Google yourselves. From Dan, Tony, Dave and myself, have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. And as always, what do they do?
Stay awesome.
Yeah. See, they know how to do it, Tony.
Oh, God.
See ya.
Bye.